I thought it would be two parts to my talk. The first bit will be a short exposition on that reading that we've just heard, a very familiar one. And then I'll take you through Mercy Ships and then just sort of weave the two a little bit together, just for about 15 minutes. So we can have the first slide of the Mercy Ship presentation, please, which is quite a vivid image of the two ships that are now functioning in West Africa. In fact, in reality, the Africa Mercy on the left is the older ship, and that was a converted channel ferry. The ship on the right is very, very new, built from scratch as a designed hospital ship, and it's twice as big. So the Africa Mercy on the left is 12,000 tonnes, the one on the right is about three times that, and the one on the left's got about the size of Western General Hospital on the left. At least it's got six operating theatres. On the right is double that, with intensive care and so on. So it's twice the capacity. And the Africa Mercy is at the moment being refitted in South Africa. The Global Mercy is in Senegal. First outreach. So it's only just been running the last few months. So it's quite a vivid image. And creating a vivid image in your mind is a concrete way to create a memorable moment. So if anything, just remember that photograph. If that's all you remember, you've got the keywords. And the internet site is really good, the website, of all the information about it. Jesus, in the talk, and we can just leave this up, actually, please. Jesus, in the section we've just read, which is part of the Sermon on the Mount, is using the same device. It makes you think. He's talking about our transformed inner nature as Jesus' disciples. And to his Middle Eastern audience, and context is always important in understanding scripture, the listeners hearing being told that they are salt and light would evoke powerful and memorable images. Jesus telling them that they have become salt and light will help them understand the transformative nature of the gospel and of also being a disciple of Jesus. Now, for us to be salt and light isn't a command. I found that quite interesting. It's a statement of fact. You are salt and light, whether you like it or not. Mercy Ships' role is to follow the model of Jesus. That's what it says as you go into receptions, a very Christian organisation. Well, they don't have to be a Christian to work for it, unless you work for it a long time. But they follow the model of Jesus. They want to be salt and light to the world that they're working in, even in, as we say, in the Muslim world in Senegal. In fact, it's the first day of Ramadan, isn't it, today? Our nature of being salt and light will flow out of our identity, and that's what actually motivates many people in Mercy Ships. Their ministry flows out of their Christian discipleship, or their worldview, and the working of the Holy Spirit in our lives. This is a paradox. We're no different from anybody else. We share in our church community the same common ground and brokenness as everybody else. But yet we have a radically different worldview, seeing ourselves as set apart because of our relationship to God through Jesus Christ. And this is the important thing in revelation of God in human form, which we'll be celebrating the resurrection, of course, in a few weeks' time. The reading today is one of the longest, if not the longest, sermon ever given by Jesus. The Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' discourse on what it means to flourish as a human being made in the image of God. And I guess that's what motivates, again, in Mercy Ships, and motivates anybody really in caring for other people, is that each individual is made in the image of God. There's that focus on the individual. You can't help the world. Mercy Ships cannot provide medical services to the whole of West Africa. It can only do its little part to each individual that comes across its path. The metaphors of salt and light, which we've just heard about, in fact, follow the Beatitudes as part of the Sermon on the Mount. And the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount has been described as a moral framework for a higher standard of living, which many, both of faith and not faith, really, would say of good principles. Many agnostics, atheists would agree with that. They're standards of living in a dark world, and it really is a dark world, and we'll be praying about that later. In fact, the Sermon on the Mount, these principles, they say they're not natural, they cannot be achieved. And maybe they are, in a sense, supernatural. I think the Bible teaches that it's only with the Holy Spirit's strength that can even begin to attain these standards. Now, you may think the latter part of the reading we heard today about unless you attain this righteousness, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven, seems to contradict the earlier part of the Sermon on the Mount. But I think the important point is that the passages are not telling us how to be right with God. They're not laws in a sense that make us right with God, but how we ought to live when we are right with God through the work of Jesus Christ. So they're principles which in our theology, as it were, don't get us to heaven, but they're a response and reality of our faith. That's why the book of James is sometimes a bit unpopular, because it seems to contradict Romans, you know, faith without works is dead. But what it's saying, I think, is that you can have faith, that's what gives you a relationship with God through Christ, but if you don't have an outworking of works, then it is you're missing out. It's not kingdom building. In fact, Jesus talked about the kingdom of God more than anything else. The other thing about this salt and light, it's the only time, I need to test this, always test what people tell you, that Jesus uses a metaphor to describe us. He uses lots of metaphors, but it's the only time he uses a metaphor to describe us. We are salt and light. And the salt of the earth speaks of our influence or impact around us. And certainly the theology of mercy ships is primarily to provide medical care, but also, if and when appropriate, to witness and pray and spread and gossip the gospel. The salt of the earth, therefore, talks about our local influence. The light of the world speaks of global influence. Look at the Great Commission in Matthew at the end. It's also at the end of Mark's Gospel as well. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. Go and preach the gospel to all creation, is what Mark 16 says. So let's just finally just explore these two metaphors before we go on to take you through the presentation. Salt, rare and precious commodity. And this is very familiar, actually, so it's sometimes difficult to preach on something that's so familiar. In the painting The Last Supper, Judas is painted in by Leonardo da Vinci as knocking over a salt cellar. I mean, it's an idea of enhancing the precious nature of this commodity. It seasons food, it enhances flavour. It's a preservative, and also in one narrative, it's also a fertiliser. They used to get the salt from the shores of rivers and lakes, and it would be used as a fertiliser as well as all those other things. Even in the Old Testament, in Leviticus, a grain offering was to have salt put in it before it was felt to be worthy. And in Exodus, you're meant to take spices and salt to give it to your sacrifice. So that's salt. That's a picture. And again, to a Middle Eastern listener, it would have that impact, a greater impact than perhaps it would today. Having said light, this is a very familiar metaphor and a powerful image. It gives life, its healing properties, it sterilizes. Many places in West Africa we've noticed if you want to sterilize your clothes, you just lie them on the floor and expose them to the sun all day. Kills everything. It's ultraviolet light, which probably is something responsible for cataracts as well. It reveals. Darkness is removed by it. The first command of the Bible from God is, let there be light, in Genesis. The Bible concludes in the end of Revelation that there will be no night. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. John 3, talking about the revelation of Jesus Christ, which to the Greek listeners would have been very, quite provocative, really. Light is coming into the world. That's the Christ. We're told by Jesus, don't hide your light. Don't put it on a stand. And it may be the context of that, and again, that's always interesting. Jesus is probably giving his Sermon to the Mount to only a few hundred people, his disciples and other followers, who you could call disciples in the sense of the text. And it is said that perhaps while he was on that hill, he was pointing to the two highest cities he could see when he talked about, you are a city, you are a light on the hill, you know, your city's on a hill. And he may well have been pointing to Tiberias and Capernaum. rabbis themselves were called about being lights of the world. So, in summary, these metaphors are a powerful declaration for our mission in our own lives, as in every believer. So that's the background, and I think Mercy Ships is really wanting to be salt and light to the communities that it serves. So let's take you through that finally. So what I'm going to do is just talk about reiterate what Mercy Ships is, just hopefully to make that clarification. Any questions after, do let me know. And and also what it does, how it works, and then finally how you might want to get involved. Okay, so that's the next slide, please. So following the 2,000-year model of Jesus brings hope and healing to the poor. That sums up its mission. That's its core mission. The poor, who, as we've just seen illustrated, may not be able to afford medical treatment, so it's free at the point of delivery, but also because of low-income countries don't have or lose, more likely, highly trained specialist surgeons and medics and dentists and so on, also provide that care. So next slide, please. This is the need. Why sub-Saharan Africa? That's where the need is. Mercy Ships reaches people with little or no health care in the poorest parts of the world. So we've seen it's not only may they not have the health care, if there is health care, which many of the countries have, and in fact in some of these countries I've sort of observed in my own eyes is some of the best quality care you can see. But if you can't afford it, you don't get it. Next slide, please. We're talking about 55 developing countries. This is historical, really, about what they've done in the past. It's volunteer-based. That's what runs it. And we're talking about, really, many hundreds of thousands of surgeries done over the last 20 or 30 years. So next slide, please. So why ships? Well, you can bring everything you want with it. 50% of the world's population live within 100 miles of a port city. Okay, next slide, please. What do they do? Well, maxillofacial, I'll show you some of that in a minute, maxillofacial, so that would be tumours, cleft lips, cleft palates, deformities. Plastic reconstruction, that includes burns. West Africa, for example, there's not much coal in Africa, it's all wood and open fires and so on. Orthopaedic, we've just heard about that, that would be not only usually congenital inborn errors of bone development is very common. Rickets, of course, nutritional. I'll talk about obstetric fistula in the end. Generals, the general surgery they would be if, for example, if a lady presents with a benign breast lump that's troubling her, that sometimes the surgeons can be more or less plastic surgeon, but they don't do sort of abdominal operations or emergency surgery. But they'll point people to who can provide that. Ophthalmic, that's very important. We've just heard about cataracts, would be a common cause of blindness, squints. Dental, because I heard about earlier on, that's very important. And palliative care, that's relatively new. And just palliative care is relatively new in this country. It's really pretty well non-existent in many areas of developing countries. Back to obstetric fistula, that's to do with dealing with complications of delivery, where you get communications between different parts of the body causing major problems. Okay, next slide, please. How we got involved was, I shared a little bit of that story. That Mercy Ship on the left, the one that's got looks like a cruise ship, because that's what it is, was converted to a hospital ship in the 80s. That's the ship that came to Bristol. That's the ship that I captured the vision, as other people did, because they're entirely dependent on volunteers, and the way they keep their costs go, that not only do you volunteer, you actually have to pay to volunteer and cover your own costs. So that's another reason I left it as late as it was, because obviously I had that financial implication there. Sometimes youngsters will go for gap years and raise their own funds, so it often tends to be a sort of dual population, isn't it? Young and older people, because if you're in the middle of your career and everything, it's a bit more difficult to take time off. Having said that, there are a group of people who've just given their lives to it, who've just spent all their lives and brought up their family and had children, and some of those children have gone back and worked in Mercy Ships. So that's the ship on the left we went to, and as I said, I wrote to the organisation, offered my services, and the next is history. Next slide, please. And the way Mercy Ships works generally is they are invited to the countries they come to. So they're very first invited to Ghana, And now they're in Senegal, so they're invited. There's a very good system of a crew go ahead of them several months and prepare the way. And this, they then set a date for a big outpatient clinic like this, and over a weekend, which is a set date. So that's how people would know when to come, like myself. And we go, and that's, for example, an example of a screening session. So it's been advertised months before with, as we illustrated there, basically saying to people in the clinics or churches or community, if you have these diseases or these problems, we can help you. And so about usually 3,000 or 4,000, maybe 5,000 people turn up over a weekend and they're screened, because not everybody will be suitable. If you've only got one cataract, we say to them, come back when you've got two. If you've got a deformity and it's any mild, well, it's not bad enough to treat yet. So difficult decisions are made sometimes. More difficult to say don't treat you than you can't. And each one of those groups there would be different stations: orthopedic station, ophthalmic station, plastic surgery, obstetric fistula, and there'll be a little table there, next slide please, which will be me with my little pathology lab set up with Ruth helping me. And we have a portable lab system where we can just look at specimens and diagnose whether they're benign or malignant. That's the fundamental question people want to know. Because before we provided this service, a lot of it was done on empirical grounds, which isn't a bad one, but you know, it can be quite accurate. We can have some surprises. Next slide, please. This is a good example. That surgeon on the right has been on the ship since the 80s. He's brought his family up. He's a plastic surgeon from California who just caught the vision and has lived on the ship ever since in community. Not everybody does that. I think the nurses, for example, probably spend 3 months there. A long-term commitment would be a year. Any longer than that, then you go through an induction course and become sort of an established Merseyship person. But you're never an employee, really. You're always a volunteer. There's a whole range of people. But the story about how you sometimes get surprised is that the guy on the left there had a sort of what appeared to be a tumour in his eye. And in the past, he would have been thought, well, if that's a tumour, it looks malignant, we can't treat you. We'd take a specimen from that, and it's full of fungus, and he had a fungal infection. So that's the value of pathology. It's so important. If you don't know the pathology, it's very difficult to manage patients. They've also got up-to-date CT scanning and laboratory services there as well. So they can get a very quick diagnostic process. So his journey would have been, he heard about Merseyships, the chap on the left there. He knew it was coming to town. He knew he had a sort of eye tumour, which is one of the things they can treat, head and neck, maxillofacial. And he came to the clinic. They decided he could come through, be screened, and was almost about to be said, on phobia, can't treat you because it looks like cancer. We do a pathology test and it's a fungus infection which can be treated. So that's the way the stories go. He would have had a CT scan to assess that the same day and be scheduled for treatment. For him, it'd be quite rapid. Sometimes the treatment is scheduled for several months ahead. Next slide, please. Okay, we teach. That's me with some students there. Next one, please, with Ruth. And next one, please, if it'll run through. That's now updated. We now have an internet system where you can read microscope slides from a distance. So I don't have to go out to Mercy ships quite so often. But we still like to go out, don't we? We'd quite like to go and visit the new ship, maybe in a different capacity, maybe teaching, engage with the local hospitals, which Mercy ships does anyway. Okay, next slide, please. This is some stories here. On the left in that little picture is a man with a great big salivary gland tumour, as it happens, which has been neglected. That's how they get that big. And on the right is after his treatment. So it's quite a dramatic difference and also has a massive impact on their lives. He can work again. That the guy on the left, for example, he was a car salesman. He lost his job, and then his wife was upset about him, and he lost his wife and children as well. But on the after his treatment, actually got his job back, and actually his family came back as well. So slightly fickle, really, but never mind. He did, happy ending there. Next one, please. This is maxillofacial cleft lip. So the baby there has got a wedge out of her upper lip. It's one of the commonest facial abnormalities. It happens in this country, but of course they're treated very quickly and are not neglected. And it's essentially a plastic surgical operation, which the surgeon I showed you before has done more cleft lips than anybody else on the planet. And after treatment, it's pretty effective, actually. Next slide, please. You really can't see much other than a tiny scar. And she can now eat and feed well. Okay. Next slide, please. Burns contracture. One of the problems with burns is as they heal, if they're not dealt with properly, you get tremendous scarring. and these need to be freed up to enable him to move that arm again. So afterwards, next slide please, he's mobile. And these sort of operations are chosen because they're relatively cheap in the sense of resources, but have massive impact, and they're often single operations. The way they do the surgery is to try and make it a single procedure. But there is follow-up. It can be done because Mercy Ships does have a cycle of work, and it's actually relatively easy for people to travel. Their public transport is relatively cheap, and so if they hear a Mercy Ship, they need follow-up, they can often visit later on. Next one, please. Orthopedic, we've just seen that illustrated. That could be rickets, or it may be just a deformity of the knee joint. Rickets usually makes the tibia curve more because the bones get soft. And what's interesting, actually, is that during the research, they've certainly found out with things like club feet, they don't actually need to do surgery anymore, but they can use special physiotherapy. There are physiotherapists on board, for example, to help management post-operatively as well. And the next slide, please, is, I think that's... similarly, that's after the operation. It's the child in the front there has got nice straight legs. Next slide, please. Eyes, ophthalmic, and obviously we're very visual creatures, aren't we? Massive impact. And it's a 10-minute operation, as you know. I guess cataract operations are relatively common in this country, and that's post-operatively. She's fine. Next one, please. The obstetric fistula is an important one. Unfortunately, women can be ostracized because of the complications of obstetric fistula, their incontinence. And this is interesting, actually, and it may happen in this country, actually, that you can train up not so much surgeons, but technicians who are capable of doing moderately straightforward reparative surgery like this. And so one impact the Mercy Ships wants to do is to, as it were, put itself out of business. So train up technical staff and clinicians to do these operations once Mercy Ships has left. Next slide, please. And that's, they have every Thursday, wasn't it, they would have a celebration day. So the women who had their fistula cured would be redressed in beautiful new clothes, and there's a sort of ceremony to enable them to go out into the community again because they're often ostracized. Next slide, please. Dental clinics. And next one, please. And palliative care. That's relatively new, but also very important. Supportive patients, when it is actually quite difficult sometimes to make that decision, I'm afraid we can't help you, but we can manage your problems. So that's a very important legacy that they're leaving. Next slide, please. So they also, as well as volunteers who fly to the ship and work, for a period of time, as I've alluded to, whether they be technical staff, ship crew, electricians, teachers, anything to run the whole ship. Also, they engage with local day crew. So at one time, maybe up to a fifth of the people working on the ship will be people who live in the country they've visited, and they'll train these people up. Sometimes the day crew actually become Mercy Ship members. And again, that leaves a legacy. So that's a really important. It provides local employment, of course, as well. So the charity is entirely voluntary. There's no government funding, but can leave a legacy like that. Thanks. And the next slide, I think, is a thank you. And that is really, if it wasn't for support from organisations and churches, Mercy Ships couldn't function. But the amazing thing is, the new ship, which was, I think it was about $35 million at the beginning, is completely paid off. So it's extraordinary when the need is there and people catch the vision, that it can be done. So thanks so much for the opportunity to be able to talk to you, share something of the gospel as well. Thank you.